Working Cows Podcast, Episode 36.
Welcome to the podcast that gives producers a platform to discuss and share paradigm-challenging practices. Practices that have increased the effectiveness of their operation and the joy that their families have received from this lifestyle.
Hey everybody, it's Clay Connery here again with another episode of the Working Cows Podcast for you. I'm really excited to share with you this episode with Steve Kenyon. A couple of weeks in a row here of out-of-the-box thinking. We're always trying to produce out-of-the-box thinking here. But Kathy Voth in particular and Steve Kenyon, both really challenging some paradigms. So I'm excited to share this with you. Steve is the custom grazer, as you will find out in the episode, at Greener Pastures Ranching up near Busby, Alberta, Canada. He leases a bunch of land and runs some cows in a custom grazing scenario up there pretty much year-round. So he's going to get into some of that a little bit later on. But I hope you enjoy this episode with Steve Kenyon of Greener Pastures Ranching.
Steve, thanks for joining me on the Working Cows Podcast. It's a pleasure to have you on. I wanted to give you the opportunity to share a little bit about your operation, and then we will dive into our topic of discussion today, the natural parasite control and resistance.
Sure, thanks for having me. I'm basically an all-natural ranch that is out of near Edmonton, Alberta, in Canada, and our biggest part of our operation is a custom grazing operation. So we're sort of like a community pasture, but it's all private land. We bring in custom animals, and we graze it on leased land. We also raise some pasture pork and some grass-fed beef as well, but our main operation is the custom grazing. We also have an educational side in the winter where we teach seminars and schools and conferences, too, about kind of what we do.
Yeah, and you've got one coming up in November. You've got two of them coming up in November, one of them in Calgary and the other one in Edmonton. Is that right?
Winnipeg. Winnipeg. Calgary and Winnipeg. We might have one in Edmonton a little later in the winter as well, but
gotcha.
See how everything goes.
Yeah.
That school's actually, we've partnered with Joel Salatin to teach a business management school. That's exciting.
Yeah. The one in Winnipeg is actually on my wife's birthday, but the one in Calgary is the day after or something like that. So we're considering making that a little birthday/anniversary trip and coming up to hang out with you guys. So that's kind of exciting.
Excellent, excellent. I've heard people say that when they get away to one of our schools, it's almost like marriage counseling too, because they get away, it's a bit of a holiday. Plus we do a lot of talk on human resources and communication as well too. Not designed at marriage by any means, but that's a lot of people claim that that's what it is for them, a nice getaway.
Yeah, you know, I think when you're talking about managing that triple bottom line, the people side of it, your wife is people, your spouse is people,
yes.
You know, and you've got to figure out how to relate to them in a way that is sustainable, right?
Yes, for sure. I say all the time that, we manage a whole lot of cattle here and a whole lot of land, but the biggest part of my business is human resources.
Yep. Yeah, you know, one of the very first episodes of the Working Cows Podcast, I talked to Dallas Mount on episode 2, and we talked about the four pillars of a ranching operation, which depending on whether you're dealing with a holistic management or a ranching for profit, it's 3 or 4, right? Pillars, kind of, and I asked him which one of these pillars is the biggest roadblock to a successful and sustainable ranch. He said, without a doubt, it's the people. You know, if you can, most ranchers love the production side. They love cows outgrowing and managing those resources well. They don't tend to enjoy the economics and finance, and then the people side of it is just kind of one of those things that they aren't really aware that that's even something that they should be thinking about as a managed resource, and so sometimes they get overlooked and those relationships get stressed. So,
yeah, you bet. As a custom grazer, I mean, I can be the best grazer in the world, but if I can't find the land to graze, it is useless to me. Or if I can't find the cattle to bring in, deal with the people to bring the cattle in, then it doesn't matter how good of a grazer I am. It's the human resources that is the biggest part.
If you can't maintain those relationships, once you've got that relationship nailed down, you gotta maintain that relationship. So,
yeah, for sure. We've got upwards of 20 different landowners. I go for a lot of tea and cookies. It's important to keep those the communication lines open.
Yeah. Yep. Those relationships. You gotta maintain those relationships. So. Recently, you posted an article on your Facebook page, which is a very active Facebook page. The Facebook page is facebook.com/greenerpasturesranching, and you posted an article about natural parasite control and natural parasite resistance. So, can we just kind of give a brief overview of what that article was about and what that thought was? What were some of the nuggets contained in that thought?
Sure, you bet. Like I said, we're an all-natural ranch. We're basically organic, but we're not certified. We've been probably organic, technically organic for, 15 years or so. We don't want to use any chemicals because it also affects our soil life. And the soil life is one of the most important parts of my business. We've got to keep them alive. Most agricultural situations do not have a fertility problem, right? Fertility is not the issue. It's a biological problem. If you can get the biologicals working, then they can get the fertility for us, right? Nowhere in nature is there a nitrogen deficient plant. It just doesn't happen. Nature solves that with biology. In agriculture, we tend to kill off our soil life, and then we end up with fertility problems that we have to bring in and add fertilizers. So if I can remove the chemicals from my operation, then I get the biology in the soil, and I can, have good, healthy crops without having to add in anything. So that's where my parasite control comes in, is part of it. We're trying to be all natural. There's three different parts to my, I hate to use the word fight, but to deal with parasites on the ranch. Number one is genetics, right? The first thing you got to do is start selecting animals that are resistant to parasites. We've been treating for many years and masking the genetics, right? So we've got an animal that is susceptible to parasites. We treat it, we keep it. Right? It doesn't get culled. And then that genetics continues on in our bloodlines. If we were to stop using chemicals and all of a sudden there's a bunch of animals that do get parasites really bad, well, then you cull them. And there's always some in the herd that don't get it as bad. So if you're, for example, if they get lice really bad, cull those ones, get rid of them. And over time, your genetics will be a lot stronger. And my best advice is to, try that and cull out those animals in 2015. We're a little behind now. but that would have been the best time when prices were high. And I was saying that in 2015, 2016, I was telling people all the time, cull hard, get rid of animals. Most people kept animals or bought animals then. We work backwards with the cycle. But genetics is the number one. If you can start selecting for natural resistance, boy, your herd will be a lot stronger in the future. I had a really good example of this a few years ago. We had a pea straw grazing field that we took over for the winter from a grain farmer, a local neighbor that I work with. We had 450 acres of pea straw residue that we were going to graze. So I didn't quite have enough animals on the herd that I was managing, so we brought in some extra animals. Hay was expensive that year, so this was a good alternative. Not the perfect diet by any means, but it for the price of hay that year, it was a good choice. So we brought in basically three different herds. One was an all-natural herd for probably 40 years. The fella, he's not organic certified, but basically he is. Hasn't used chemicals for many, many years. The other herd was organic certified, but only for maybe a few years. And he's been selecting for a little bit, but not near as long. And then the other herd that came in was basically a commercial herd. They were actually treated for parasites in the fall, that third herd. But they showed up on the neighbor's grain land here. So, that winter, we had them out on the grain field, of course, and there's not very many trees out there. Everything was fenced off. The second last paddock we got into had a bush in the middle, a little bit of lowland and a bush. And the very last paddock was right by the highway. So we got into that second last paddock, and all of a sudden I realized they started to rub lots. So they did have some lice, and once we got into those trees, boy, it started to show. So there was animals that were losing, you know, patches of hair, and, you know, typical lice doesn't look that good. And then, of course, the last paddock were right by the highway. I'm like, oh, this doesn't look good. So we finished up, put them into the corral system, and we started sorting them. And they were all a Red Angus herd, right? They all blended in really well together. They were all the same. And started sorting them out. The all-natural herd for 30 or 40 years didn't have a patch of hair missing. Right? They looked perfect. It wasn't an issue with them. The other herd that has been organic for a few years, they had lots of hair missing, lots of patches. Not too bad. Like, wouldn't put them all in the cull pen just because of that. But the commercial herd that had been treated for parasites that fall before, a whole bunch of them were almost bald, right? They were missing big patches of hair. And the noteworthy thing that I noticed is a high percentage of the calves. So all these animals still had their calves on all winter. A high percentage of the calves had pink eye when we left that spring. None of the other calves had pink eye, just those ones from that herd. So that shows me there's a huge correlation to the genetics in the herd when they came in. The other side of that, the second point that I was going to make on
in this thought that you posted, which will be linked at the show notes page, workingcows.net/36. You can find this article linked there at workingcows.net/36. The second line in there is chemical treatment is only a quick fix, which is, you know, kind of what you're describing right here, is that they've been kind of quickly fixing the issue with this one commercial herd, while over the course of 30 to 40 years, that natural herd has selected for animals that are parasite resistant, and then basically, they have very little to no issue with the parasites because they've selected these animals that are resistant naturally to the parasite, and they've just been willing to not get emotionally attached to the animals and to cull them based on, you know, some criteria that maybe other people are willing to try and fix just with a chemical treatment.
Yes, and I don't want to lead anyone astray there. I don't think it would take 30 to 40 years to do that, right? Within 5 to 10 years, you could easily have a much stronger herd.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, do that when prices are good so that the cull, you still get something for the culls.
Right. One of the illustrations that I think is helpful is in a documentary I recently watched with Joel Salatin. He says that his dad saw just chemical-based agriculture, whether it's applying chemical to fields or applying chemical to animals, is like a drug addiction. You can never get ahead of it. You're always going to need more and more and more to fix the issue that you're trying to fix.
Yeah, and then you'll have to change types, right? This one's not effective anymore, so let's try this one. And yeah, it's actually a downward spiral, is how I look at it. It just keeps getting worse and worse every time you do it. And it causes more issues in other parts of the farm that you don't realize.
Right. You know, like, I mean, you don't see it, but that what's going on under the soil and the effect that it has there.
And in the animal. Right? Why did the animals that were treated, why did their calves get pink eye? Right? Like, I don't have the answer to that, but it weakened their immune system. Right? Like, it changed something within the animals. And that passed down to the calves. Right? The calves weren't treated. It was just the cows that were treated.
Sure. What was your motivation for the all-natural emphasis?
Basically just finding a better way to do it. I could see that it wasn't working, and I went to a lot of conferences and a lot of seminars and, you know, was mentored by a lot of good people. It just makes sense. Nature never uses that.
True. Yeah, you got thriving herds of deer and elk and different things like that that are.
Yeah. You know, and I mean, nature's pretty cruel. I mean, I've seen moose out there with really bad lice, and you know, they get thin. We want to be able to control some of that, but we've just got to manage for it. You don't have to mask it with chemicals all the time.
Sure. Were you about to move on to the second point there?
Yeah, because it kind of ties in with that story I had. Second point to this is nutrition, proper nutrition. If we can keep the diet of the herbivore natural, so basically eating grasses and legumes and try and stay away from grains and other additives in the feed, then we keep their immune system and their hormonal system strong. Okay, as soon as you start changing diets, then it can sometimes weaken those two systems. So definitely for parasites, having a strong hormonal system, for example, will help the skin secrete oils to resist lice. So we've got to keep the diet properly. And with that story about oat on the pea straw, well, we were eating pea straw, so which is kind of a grain crop, not as natural. They were getting some peas in there. Because of that, too, it was also just a residue. We were supplementing with a pellet from the local feed mill. So it was peas and malt sprout pellet, but not a natural diet. So I'm pretty sure we didn't keep their immune system and their hormonal systems in tip-top shape. So if we can keep their genetics strong, keep their nutrition balanced, then I think that's a strong effort against parasites coming in.
And so when you talk about nutrition, you're talking about basically a good pasture management and keeping them on natural pastures as much as possible. Is that kind of the ideal nutrition?
If we can graze pastures most of the year, that's great. If we can't get through the winters, I know some places have harder winters than others, then hay, right? Good quality hay. Just stay away from the grains and the feed additives and the other feeds that we tend to think we can get away with. Natural diet is the best. And, of course, out on pasture is the best. There's even a change, I believe, in feeding hay versus, you know, grazing dormant season grass. Just not quite as natural. But I know a lot of places we can't always graze year-round, so. And I'm similar. We're in a very harsh environment. In the winter, we do quite a bit of bale grazing. So,
yeah.
But that diet is part of that. So the nutrition is part of it. In the summertime, a proper rotation helps to break the parasite cycles. So the third battle against it is keeping a proper rotation. If your animals keep moving, keep depositing the manure and then moving away from it, and then our soil life is healthy and can decompose the manure, then the parasite eggs that are in the manure are also gone. And then when the cattle come back around on another rotation, the eggs aren't there, so they're not reinfested. So a good summer pasture rotation is not only good for the animals, the land, but also good for parasite control.
You say there in this article, if the soil life is killed off, more manure remains and more parasites are present. What are some of the things that kill off the soil life? in your understanding?
Oh, just about any type of chemical, tillage, fertilizers, you know, anything that we're adding to the soil. I try and keep it as natural as possible, just to keep the working conditions favorable for those employees. I call all my underground critters my employees. They work for room and board. I've got to give them food, water, and shelter. So if I can provide that for them, then they're going to have a good working environment and they're going to stick around.
And what's shelter for your underground employees?
A good roof. So a good thatch layer on that soil, keeping it covered, which one of the big parts of that is it holds moisture. Right? They've got to have moisture under there. With a good thatch layer on that good solid top layer to the soil, then we can hold more moisture for them. So that's the roof.
If you are going to treat an animal for a parasite, what are you going to use? Are there any natural options that you'll use or anything like that?
Yeah, I haven't had to treat very much in the last few years, but now that being said, I don't have a lot of, I don't always have year-round cattle. I've had a herd for about 4 or 5 years there that we kept them year-round. I think the only thing we treated with 1 year, they did get a little bit of lice, so we sprayed on, that was on the year of that pea straw, we sprayed on a Watkins organic cleaner at about a 2% solution, just my guess of what it was, 2%. And that seems to do a pretty good job initially. It's not systemic, so you have to do it more than once. You have to do it, you know, maybe 2 weeks later, you hit them again and try and deal with it. I've found in the long run, once you hit spring and start doing a pasture rotation, you know, the lice just goes away. For internal parasites, many people talk about using apple cider vinegar. I do use that for my pigs all summer long. I've got it in their water, and I have used it in the fall for cattle, just as a treatment for internal parasites.
And that's apple cider vinegar with the mother, right? Is that?
Yes. Yeah, organic with the mother. So that would be the bacteria culture inside.
Right. Yep. What about diatomaceous earth? Have you used that at all? Or?
I haven't. I think I've got a bag out here still from a few years ago. I haven't seen very, you know, much results from it. So apple cider vinegar, I have seen the results. We ran out one summer with the pigs. And you could see the change in them. They just looked different. Their skin looked different. So I'm a big believer in that. Apple cider vinegar for the cattle. It wasn't a perfect experiment, but quite a few years. We've done a treatment in the fall, and we've taken parasite samples after. The herd that was treated had zero parasite eggs, and the herd that wasn't treated had some parasite eggs in it. Not a heavy load, but there was still some there.
How often do you have cattle on land that you're managing? You've got cows that you're managing and moving year-round, is that right?
Yes. Most years we have them all winter as well as all summer. We've been up to 1,200 head of cattle. We're down a little bit right now. I think we're about 800 head. Every year changes, we get land, we lose land, you know, but yeah, we're in that range somewhere. In the winter time, we don't have that many. We usually manage, you know, 200, 300 in the winter time, depending on the year and the customer.
And you don't own many or any, what does that look like for you?
We don't own any cattle. I just, whenever I run the numbers, it just doesn't seem to pencil out. We do own our pigs. So we buy wiener pigs in the spring, and we pasture raise them, and we butcher them and sell them all winter long, but not the cattle.
And the pigs are direct marketed then? You guys are doing all that yourself? Or?
Yeah, you bet. My wife started an online store that we direct market through and deliver into the city.
You mentioned running them with the cows. What do they play any part in this parasite control? I mean, it's all about an integrated system, I assume, right?
The pigs, yeah, they're not technically with the cattle. They graze on the same land. I actually use the cattle to keep the grass quality high for the pigs. So there's one paddock within the cow rotation that the pigs are on, and they rotate around on that paddock. but it's way more than they need. So what we do is the cows come around, the cows knock the grass down, I protect a little bit ahead of them, and then the pigs are basically grazing second cut all year long, right? They get really good stuff in the spring, and then the cows knock it down, and as it regrows, the pigs move on to that regrowth, and they get really high-quality grass for, you know, all summer long. We might do it one more time later in the summer to knock it down. But, yeah.
Anything you'd like to add as far as the all-natural parasite control and any of those things?
I think it's going to be different for every farm, but I think we need to start thinking about our soil life, making sure we take care of them. Also taking care of the microbiology within the rumen. There's all sorts of natural systems out there that we don't have a clue about, that we don't understand. So if I can keep things as natural as possible, as close to what nature would do, then I think we're farther ahead in the long run. We just got to start looking at our production practices from, you know, the biological view. How is this affecting my fungus? The mycorrhizae fungi in the soil is a huge asset if we can get it working. The bacteria, the earthworms, the dung beetles. How do we keep all those guys healthy and working hard? Because they'll work tirelessly for you. Best employees you'll ever have. They never take a sick day, and they work until they die. So you can't get a better employee than that.
Yeah, no retirement plan required, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I was just on a pasture tour, and they were pointing out some different things. One of the things they were pointing out is the channels in the soil left by, you know, all those different critters you're talking about, spiders, dung beetles, and that's a huge, huge part of water infiltration. You know, they use the illustration of dumping water down this hole, and you dump a lot of water. You know, they'd dump over a liter of water into this hole, and it hadn't filled up yet. They hadn't gotten it to come out the top yet, and the hole was smaller than your pinky, you know.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
it was under a cow turd, and it was created by some kind of a beetle or a spider. And, you know, you think about that, and then the other thing that they were talking about on this tour was that a 1% increase in soil life is 18,000 gallons per acre of water that can be held just by a 1% increase in the soil life. And that's, you know, that's a lot of, you're talking, so the good pasture rotation, making sure that you've got that thatch roof, as you said, on there that can slow that water down so that it can infiltrate, not run off or not run through, is a big part of it. What's your rotation look like? What's your pasture rotation look like?
In general, everyone's a little bit different, and every year is a little bit different, but we try to do a twice over rotation. So we'll do one rotation in the spring. We'll try and go as fast as we can. So we'll be moving every day or every second day at least. Later in the summer, the second rotation will slow down, and we'll be moving every 2 to 3 to 4 days maybe. Some bigger paddocks maybe 4. But that's what we try and do every year. It, you know, a little bit different on every pasture. Everything's got its own unique features, but.
Yep. Yeah. Your moisture is always going to be your biggest determining factor, you know.
Oh, that's moisture. That is the number one nutrient we should be managing. Forget about all the other nutrients. You've got nothing if you don't have the moisture. So you got to hold on to it.
Yep. Yeah, you got to, And that's, kind of back to what I was saying about the 1% increase equaling 18,000 gallons of stored water per acre. You know, that's
all those critters.
Yeah, one of the guys I've had on who does custom grazing, he refers to himself as a solar cowboy. You know, he's managing sunshine, and you're going to have sunshine. That's pretty much guaranteed, you know, or it is guaranteed. But the rain may or may not come, but you can do a lot to manage how you use that water, if you're paying attention to some of these things.
Yeah, and the soil organisms and just your biological within the system is so important. We're actually having a pasture walk here coming up in July, and this year's topic is on the soil health. And we're bringing in Wendy Tahiri. She's a soil microbiologist. Her specialty is mycorrhizae fungi. So I'm very excited about having her come in. Last year, we actually had an entomologist come to the pasture walk. That was really cool because he talked about the importance of dragonflies and spiders and the different critters that are in our system as well, not just in the soil, but also in our environment that are beneficial to us. So all those critters are really important to my operation.
Absolutely. Well, Steve, how can people keep up with you if they want to see where you're going to be, if they want to register for an upcoming event or any of those things? What are some ways they can catch up with where you're going to be?
My most active is my Facebook page at Greener Pastures Ranching, basically posting on it pretty well daily. And we do have a website at greenerpasturesranching.com. It's got dates and information on it as well. But Facebook is definitely the most active. We try and keep it as an educational page where people can interact and ask questions and just keep the education going, that's all.
Yeah, I've been thinking that somebody needs to take the time to add up all the money that you could have saved someone if they were taking your advice on your Facebook page with like the offsets for electric fence using junk house water hose or house water lines and different things like that. You know, there's just so much good stuff on there that I really appreciate. So.
Well, good. Yeah, no, that's what it's for, is just to keep. I've had a lot of good, great mentors in my career already. And I do believe in giving back. I just think it's so important to get that information out there and get people thinking a little different. People ask me all the time about me teaching these new ways of farming, and I'm like, no, they're not new. They're old. Right? All we're doing is going back to what we used to do before everything got turned around. So.
Yeah. Yeah. No. That's. I was talking to somebody the other day. I think we should probably eat more like our grandparents and great-grandparents. We should probably, you know, farm more like our grandparents and great-grandparents and, you know, some of those things.
So true.
Yeah, no, I appreciate your time. Thank you so much for taking time to do this again. We had some reception issues on the last attempt at recording this, so it was loud and clear today, and I really appreciate your time.
No problem. I appreciate the opportunity to say my piece.
As I said, Steve was really challenging some paradigms there with that episode. We got another great episode coming your way next Monday for the Working Cows podcast. I also have a couple of exciting announcements that I'm really excited to share with you in the very near future, so keep your eyes and ears peeled for those. They will be coming out from the Working Cows podcast in the very near future. We'll see you next week.
We invite you to visit workingcows.net to subscribe to the show via iTunes or Stitcher. You'll also find detailed show notes pages, resources from our guests, and the industry leaders who have influenced them. For more ideas on putting your cows to work for you in a more profitable way, tune in next week.